this is some highlights from the last Liminalist live meetup on Saturday, the 21st of March 2020, specifically the exploration of the implications of COVID-19, the so-called alleged coronavirus. How is everybody feeling? Well, you don't have to answer that. In fact, I don't want you to answer it. It's a question I get. Oh, hold on one sec. It's a question I get when I work in the thrift store. The days that I work, I get it time and time again. Well, they don't say, how are you feeling? They just say, how are you? And of course, I don't like it as a question. But I wanted to ask everybody this at the starting point, so that you will consider putting your attention on yourself, and I mean it literally, how are you feeling? Well, I don't mean it in an existential sense, as in how is it happening that you are feeling. You could go there too, but I mean what are you feeling? What's going on in your body? And start there. I mean, let's start there. We have started there. Good for me to stay with that. Maybe that's why I got the grapes. It's a prop. Because whatever goes on here today, for you, it's going on in your body. That's where it's happening. It's not really happening, like your attention may be on me and what I'm saying and so on and so forth, but the real show is you, where you are. That's your show, that's your panopticon. And well, I was gonna also bring up the coronavirus right away, because it's probably on some of your minds. Taking a wild guess. Recently, I've kind of heard two stories around the coronavirus. One is by somebody very close to me who mentioned that David Icke was talking about it, and David Icke is someone I check in with from time to time for sentimental reasons. But I've also found he can be quite useful in terms of the things he cites a sound, even if his the way that he interprets them I'm not necessarily so on board with. Anyway, so you can imagine what David Icke's version was, unless you've never heard of David Icke. Doom and gloom. And actually, it was quite upsetting for me. I even had a dream about it afterwards, because he's claiming that one of the primary agendas here is to take down all private businesses, mum and pop businesses. It will strip us further of that autonomy. And of course, I run a mum and pop business. I'm Pop, and my wife is Mum, and the cat is, you know, well, not really part of the business. But anyway, so it was quite upsetting to think about that. Anyway, but the reason I mention it, the other story I heard the same day yesterday was from another close associate, and they shared a thing on Facebook of some, I don't know who, some spiritually oriented person, maybe they were a channeler or a psychic or something, and they were talking about how this was the transformation of humanity, that we were evolving into a new species, and the coronavirus was the means by which we were becoming a new humanity, and that all the people who died, well, they were just choosing to die because they didn't want to be on the other side of things. And it was all love and light, except, well, yeah, lots of people are going to die, but that's okay. Can't make an omelette. So, anyway, it occurred to me that both of those narratives have some truth in them, perhaps. I'm not so sure about the second one, but it's certainly things I have believed in the past and talked about. The Divine Virus was the second or third website I ever had, was called Divine Virus. I have long believed that the divine would emerge in this world in a similar way to how a virus does, and with similar ripple effects of disrupting structures. And you can't transform, to use an analogy that some of you have used in answering the questionnaire, you can't transform a caterpillar into a butterfly without breaking the poor little caterpillar down to nothing, just liquid. So I'm somewhat on board, as I said, with both narratives, the dark and the light. But they're just stories. And my feeling about the coronavirus is that whatever it is that's happening is not something we can get our minds around. And it would probably be foolish to try, but it's very tempting to. But I think the nature of this transition, which may be a transformation, which may be the end times or the beginning times and or the beginning times, is the liminal period, in which we don't know which way is up and which way is down and what's black and what's white and who's God and who's the devil. And so to try to know prematurely or to try to identify, is going to be very, very tempting, but not very helpful, I would say. Anyway, I only brought this up. This is a preamble to probably another preamble. I like my preambles. So far as listening to me, I'll be telling stories. I mean, I'm already telling stories, so just don't get stuck on the stories. They're just ways of describing what's going on, so that maybe we'll put our attention on what's going on and then forget the description. If it's close enough, then our attention will go where it needs to go. So, I think that's all for the preamble, and then the final preamble, because this is all a preamble to what comes out of the collective here, like what's coming into form while you listen and I speak. Something's happening. I don't want to pretend that I know what it is. I'm the guy who knows what it is, but I am a guy who knows that something's happening. Not exactly a revelation, is it? But I mean something quite mysterious that we may only find the shape of through articulating it, through expressing it. Otherwise, it may be like a dream. We wake up from it, we've got this vague memory, but it's so difficult to mentalize it or turn it into a story that we don't try, and then we forget it, and all we remember is we did have a really intense dream last night, but blow me if I can remember what it was. So, yeah, I guess what I'm curious to see, and I hope you're curious to see also, is what's bubbling up in you as you listen to something bubbling up in me. And what are the parallels? Is it a shared bubbling? Are we all in the same pot together? Or is it the same temperature? Are we transforming in the same way? Are we cooking at the same rate? Are we going to be edible? See, I mean, there's quite a lot of responsibility doing what I'm doing. I'm not saying that so you feel sorry for me. But this awareness that we want the best to come out of us. We want to be able to bring out our best, and only our best, really. But you can't bring out your best if you're not willing to bring out something that isn't your best. So there's a line there, as far as better to express something than nothing. But on the other hand, I guess this was the nature of my blog post, was the last one was, there's something about that line between participation and non-participation, between engagement and non-engagement, when we're in a group setting, that's quite nerve-wracking. And of course, if we were all football fans and we were just together to talk about how to make Arsenal great again, which I noticed somebody following me on Twitter had that name. I guess it's a joke, isn't it? It's a play on MAGA. I just realised that now. Then we'd be fine. We could just talk about Arsenal, right? Or if this was a movie meeting and we were just going to deconstruct The Matrix or Stanley Kubrick, and you were there for that, you'd already know, you know, more or less where you were, and you'd know what you had to contribute. But the nature of these events, Dave events, is much subtler and vaguer. It's really to find out who we are and why we're here. So it's not immediately apparent what we might have to contribute. Like, I don't want this to be a discussion group. I know that, even though we've had discussion groups. I want it to be a sharing thing. That's what I want. Doesn't mean, you know, I get to decide, but I definitely want what's best for everyone. So I'd say, before we open it up, or as we open it up, go back to how are you feeling, and what are you feeling? Like, what's actually going on now with you? And is there something in that soup, that miasma of neurology that you are, your body, which is the, you know, the brain, heart, intestinal system? It's all neurons. They're all firing, and they've all been massaged today during this event. By whatever, and so there will be firing in new ways. There'll be the possibility of new insights and new articulations and new questions. Dirty Harry, you're unmuted, I think.
Can you hear me, sir?
I can hear you.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. I wasn't sure how to work this thing. It's my first time. So if we're sharing how we're feeling, I think I'm having difficulty breathing. And I don't know if that's a combination of observing current events and trying to come to my own conclusions or my own understanding about them. I do have a lot on my own plate. I've got a baby coming in 1 month. And I'm out of a job. I'm currently residing in Seattle, where along with the rest of Washington State, we're experiencing an economic blockade. No one could go out to eat, no one could go out to do anything, much of anything, while we wait for ostensibly for some degree of containment to be attained. It's definitely shaping reshaping my perspective, you know, on the meaning of life. What am I defined by job? If so, is that why I'm having is that why I feel like I can't take a full breath now that I don't have a job? These kind of things. That's it.
Thanks, Harry. Harry the Dirty. That's dirty Hare Krishna, I guess. Were you having trouble? I mean, is this related to being on this event, the trouble breathing? Has it changed, or has this been going on?
It's been going on for some days now. I don't know, do you recommend any breathing techniques? Something you might be willing to share from your own experiences when you feel like a tiny ant facing, or were we talking about the apocalypse?
Well, the only breathing technique I know is breathe, which is not meant to be glib, but I mean, being more aware of breathing and just take deeper breaths and keep taking deeper breaths. Imagine, well, I know for myself that a lot of breathing problems come from being constricted in the chest, and that's partly that's an unconscious habit as well as a real constriction. The larger question is anxiety, isn't it? Contraction in the face of anxiety. And I was feeling some stress today, actually. I thought I might end up mentioning that, but I didn't, because I guess I'd forgotten about it by the time I showed up here, fortunately. But little things and that I've now forgotten what they were, but there were enough, it was a slightly stressful morning and more than average, and it occurred to me, well, this is this is presumably nothing compared to what's going on globally, like it's just a tiny taste of the rising levels of anxiety on the planet.
The helplessness to me is what, and maybe the realization that those things that we thought defined us don't so much when they're taken away, which of course is mental, but.
Well, my tendency is to see crises as opportunities. I mean, that's something that might be theoretical to some, but it is also practical. And certainly you can reduce it to the bare bones of anything that causes anxiety is an opportunity to reduce anxiety, as in to see the way in which we get triggered. Our nervous system gets triggered, activated, provoked, and we go into lockdown, internal lockdown. That thing that happens in us is a combination of an external stimuli, or a whole flood of stimuli as now, with an internal reaction that was implanted in us a long, long time ago. And we can't change the environment. The environment has always been somewhat dangerous, let's say. If we go back to the jungle, clearly there were dangers back then. So there's never been a time in human history where human beings haven't been faced with a fairly constant series of possible dangers or threats. They're very different now, and our nervous systems are very different. But the idea of somehow changing the environment or our circumstances so that there's nothing to be anxious about clearly is only going to make us more anxious. This is, of course, what the 1% are seeking, I suppose, is enough wealth to have their breakaway civilization where they can create a permanent bubble from all kinds of stresses. We don't want to go that route. So then that leaves, what is it in us that reacts to the stimuli in such a way that we generate anxiety more than we actually need to generate? And to bring it back to these events, I think that, I mean, to the present, to this event, I should say, I think this is one of the primary benefits of these events. Is there an opportunity to see the ways in which our anxiety generator, our internal lockdown mechanism, gets triggered by the smallest things, the smallest thing there is, essentially, which is another human being. Which you could say, well, my cat's smaller than a human being, and of course my cat doesn't cause me anxiety. But you know what I mean. I mean, it's, we are human beings, so if other human beings make us anxious, and what we think they might think about us makes us anxious, and we'd say, I'd say that that's a recipe for never-ending anxiety. So I would say start there. And it's true that when I do these events, I do want try to remember to breathe and to notice how I might breathe more shallowly due to anxiety because of the awareness of other human beings having their attention on me. And that's the flinch that I've been writing about recently, the recoil. And then, as far as I can see, there's no way to clear out that program except by constantly triggering it in the right environment, whereby it's just a soft, gentle trigger, but we still have this overreaction, or what we start to perceive as an overreaction, perhaps. And we can compare our reaction to the reality that's triggered it. I feel really anxious now, I can't breathe, but it's just because I have to speak on a live public event with some guy whose books I like. And what will everyone think? Is anyone feeling like they need to... The analogy that came to mind was vomiting bile on an ayahuasca retreat. I don't really encourage anyone to vomit, but there's something that really needs to come up. You feel it really, you want to express it.
Well, I was going to mention that I was hoping we would have a little bit more time to get into our individual existential crises before we got tossed back into the general soup for everyone to hear. But that might be a constructive way to go around if this were a round table type of thing.
Do you feel you have shared your existential crisis and others have not?
Well, I got into something. I feel as though I broke a little bit of ground by revealing some personal, you know, my personal stakes in a larger crisis, which is how we're all reacting individually to COVID-19. I'd love to hear how other people are reacting to it. You know, I mean, of course, it's lovely to hear where people are from and what you do for a living, but this is a totally different scenario, and I really feel like I feel as though the culture will never be the same. And I can feel this electricity sparking everywhere. I'd love to hear if anybody else is feeling anything like that, or anything they have to contribute to that effect about how things are changing or seem to be changing.
Okay. Well, anyone, of course, can speak up any time. Okay. Cheto.
The reason I wanted to chime in is because I live on the other side of the world from you, Harry. I live in Serbia. We're under essentially emergency laws have been passed. Over 65s are not allowed to leave their homes, which is why I'm staying with my family, visiting my mum. Fortunately for us, she lives on the outskirts of Belgrade, the capital, and she's got a garden. So it's less claustrophobic than if we stayed in our apartment in the city. But overall, curfews, police, anyone who lives abroad but is a citizen of Serbia who's come back recently has some kind of app. I'm not entirely sure what it is, which tracks your movement. So recently, they've started catching people out if they're not following the prescribed behavior, which is self-isolation. And I heard from a friend of mine yesterday who's in Thailand now, the same app is being used there. Also, social network profiles are being monitored to make sure that people are not breaking quarantine, self-isolation, or breaking the curfew. Essentially, I'm not particularly bothered by the very coronavirus. It is what it is. We'll see. We'll know what it is. But one thing that I've always feared is this kind of coming technocratic feudalism. And all of this has been pretty much, has been, you know, a long time coming. And this is a perfect situation where this can be applied. It's not quite, it's not an open war. It's not even a question of having someone in the fifth column. It's not like there's, you know, the Soviet concept of a counter-revolutionary hiding somewhere in the city. It's an invisible enemy. It's quite schizophrenic. And a lot of people are taking it badly. Some are taking it badly just to be hemmed in at home. But overall, almost everyone who's not freaking out over the virus itself is freaking out over the future of the economy. And I think almost all of us, well, I'm not, I don't want to speak for anyone else, but from most people I know, people have mortgages, credit cards. We'll see. I don't think if this persists for another 3 months, which is that's what the constitution allows in Serbia, it's going to be like waking up in a different landscape. Almost everyone's going to go under. And I'm not talking about, although I'm, you know, I've got a special place in my heart for David Icke as well. It doesn't bode well for most. I actually don't know anyone who's financially secure. And because my mum is just on the outskirts of Belgrade, we've stocked up on a few things, you know, pasta, rice, like basics, just so we don't have to go to the shop all the time. The shops are still not empty. There's plenty of toilet paper and all that stuff. It's just that you don't know if they close the borders to trucks, because there's no international travel now. You can't get into Serbia unless you walk across the border. So if they shut the borders completely, then the food won't come in. So it's impossible to predict. So the heightened state of anxiety that everyone's already in for a variety of different reasons, whether it's genuine everyday monetary stuff or from being on Facebook too much, it's all coming to a fore now. Yeah. I've been so tense for so long that I seem to be I'm very relaxed whenever there's a crisis. The state of my body matches the outside atmosphere.
Who had said, who had done, who had paused, and who has nothing? Let it be said, it was not what it was. It's just resting on our shoulders. Hear our voice say, don't I know enough? Hear our voice say, snakes, don't I know enough? Another cord and wolves are in the yard, don't I know enough? Clogged flock of dangerous thoughts, don't I know enough? I will tire and softly moan, don't I know enough? Hear our voice say, don't I know enough? Hear our voice say, don't I know enough?
this is relates to this question of, are we living in the end times, and is it worth living as if we're living in the end times, even if it turns out we're not? I think it is, because for myself, the imperative, and this was pre the virus anyway, and it wasn't really related to the feeling of being, I suppose it was somewhat, because as I say, I've always felt this way, but get to nature, find a place in nature. This isn't me prophesizing to you all, but for myself, I want to get to nature, find a place in nature where I can be self-sufficient and where other people I care about, you know, are close enough by. That just seems a smart move for me at this time in life that wasn't really in the context of, oh my God, time's running out. But then somehow I realized, well, actually, maybe that is the context. So what I'm trying to say is, just as one would hope to live as full a life as possible, as if one might die tomorrow, regardless of whether one's going to live for another 50 years, why not do and try and set up the best kind of way of living as if this whole thing was going to hell, even if it doesn't, because we'll still have set up the best way of living. And that is definitely has to do with being together in nature. James, did you still want to share your thing?
Sure, yeah. I was just going to relate an experience I had about everything that's been, you know, happening in the world lately. My wife was sharing something with me, and I, you know, relating to the atmosphere of everything that's going on in the world right now. And I responded kind of with, I don't know, cynicism and maybe making light of, cynically making light of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. And she pointed that out, and it escalated, and I noticed myself getting angry. And then in the process of this, it kind of a light bulb went off with both of us. And of course, it was hard for me to regulate and realize this, but the stages of grief are a very real thing. And I don't think they're for only for the weak-willed, or you know, they're not a crutch for weak people. It's something that everyone has to go through. And so I realized that, you know, I had just transitioned from the first stage, which is denial, into anger. And then I just kind of had some time alone where I just kind of collected my thoughts and kind of grounded myself. And then the next stage is bargaining. And I actually, this was Monday, and I went to the grocery store, and I just, and I almost consciously knowing that, oh, okay, I'm in the bargaining stage now, so I'm going to stock up on some things and, you know, make additional preparations. So just kind of, and it's a cycle, unfortunately, because I've noticed I'm kind of, I think I'd gone through the depression stage more recently, and then I think I'm back in a different stage of denial, because I've been doing some things to take my mind off of the situation in the world. So it's a cycle, but just to me being, remembering that that's something that we, you know, it's so typical that it's a defined sequence of stages, right? And so it just helps me when I'm in a situation like that to remind myself that, okay, these are the things that I pretty much have to get through, and I might find myself repeating the cycle several times, you know, as you go further into the acceptance stage. So I've been through a lot of those stages, but I think I'm back again in kind of another stage of denial, if I'm honest with myself. Just thought I'd share that experience.
Thanks, James. That was interesting. There was a, it reminded me of this line in a TV show that we watched recently, about the supernatural entities. Quite good, actually, The Outsider. And one of the things that makes the show good is that it takes the supernatural seriously as a subject, which includes or primarily is that people's psychological response to, you know, a traumatic encounter with the supernatural. And particularly, specifically, you know, the difficulty of really getting to grips with something that doesn't fit with their view of what's possible, with their interpretation of reality. And one of the characters at a certain point towards the end says, when another of the characters is kind of panicking, you take small bites. Just take small bites. It's like he's a Vietnam vet. He's just very laconic. As in, you don't try and think, because the other character was just trying to say, wait, but if this is real, then that means everything I think I know about everything is wrong. And he was trying to just take the whole thing in, and his whole worldview was falling apart. So it's like, no, you just take small bites. You just deal with as much as you have to deal with in order to practically, you know, respond to the situation in the practical way, rather than think about what are all the implications of this. And certainly for myself, I mean, I've tried not to think too much about all the implications, because I just know there's so many ways we can get misinformed, and a little bit of misinformation goes a long way if we run with it. It's back to these stories we might start telling ourselves. And if we're, you know, we're talking about a pandemic, that's a very big story. Then if we kind of hook that into some sort of end times apocalypse thing, including, you know, the prison planet global lockdown, it gets an even bigger story. All I really know for sure is that I can't plan my future the way that I thought I could a couple of weeks ago. And that in itself is quite a mouthful, actually. I mean, I'm quite wary of getting apocalyptic, as the whole world does. Isn't that ironic? I've been trying to get the world to think apocalyptically for 30 years, and now I'm like, well, hold on. Don't panic.
Jason.
Yes, Hugo.
There's a, hi everyone. There's a meme that's going around on the socials of, you know, our grandparents went to war and, you know, something like that. And it says, all we're asking you to do is sit on the couch and watch Netflix for a couple of weeks or whatever it is. It's like a get over yourself type concept, right? And that it's a short term, and you know, it's amusing in some ways. But I think the interesting part is to actually reflect on, you know, the end times and stuff. You know, like the context of just time. Like if you think about the world wars, if you were like born in 1900 or something like that, and you just went through two world wars in your life, you'd honestly think to yourself that we were at the end times then, right? You just say, oh, humanity is desperately trying to blow themselves up, and there's millions of people killed at their own hands. Like it's a known, it was a choice. Like if you like, it was a decision to do. And in some ways, I think touching on the anxiety, it's the fact that it is an unknown other. It's not something you can, you know, we don't have a weapon that can kill it yet. There's all this focus on finding a vaccine, and hopefully it's soon and all this kind of thing, and then we can go back to our lives. And they're sort of saying that could be a 12 to 18 month process. And for me personally, I've sort of looked at that and I've gone, okay, well, I wonder what 12 to 18 months feels like. You know, here we are a couple of months in and we're free, you know, we're already starting to feel that anxiety and that pressure. What does it feel like in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months? Like when we get to the end there, like, where do we get to? Are we all praying to science for this vaccine to save us? Or is there a contextual thing where we sort of go, well,
you know, this is, we sort of know there's an end date where we could possibly get rid of this virus and we can move on, allegedly move on with our lives. No, forgetting all the economic, I mean, the economics is a whole nother package, but in terms of living, and I think, you know, it certainly got me thinking about people in war-torn areas, the Middle East, which just have lived with this for forever. I mean, imagine living your entire life where you're basically in pandemic lockdown, lack of supplies, lack of medical care conditions the whole time. And it does make me sort of think that we're now getting back to this connectedness and this merging, that we're now really starting to understand, like it's kind of like we've lived in this virtual age where we can see people over there and they're suffering and we go, oh, that's sad that they're suffering. And now we're all getting a taste of it, like a real taste of it. And it's, I think there's potential, like that was one of your questions, is humanity, can it save itself? Can it pull out of the nosedive? Maybe we will or we won't, but maybe at the very least we will get this sense of, like a real sense of what's going on. Like we'll actually, instead of just pretending to know how people feel, we can go, actually, we all live through that. And I do sort of, you know, part of me sort of feels that maybe when all this has run its course, that we really will be different, whether it's the end of times or whether there's, you know, you can look at all the negatives that can come out of it, but I think hopefully deep down in the human psyche or the humanity that we realize that it was an opportunity for us to just feel that connection between ourselves and that it was actually a real thing. We actually all, everyone on the planet went through it at the same time. And so, yeah, that was, I think that's an interesting, it'll be interesting to say, but anyway, I'm rambling a bit now, but anyway, that's all I wanted to say about the anxiety. I certainly feel for Harry there. And you know, we're all in the same boat. I mean, we wonder, you know, we're all just sort of hoping that things can keep going. And I think we're all going to go through the motions. The government's going to ostensibly do what they can do. That's what they say, whether we can trust them. But I think for me anyway, it's kind of like I've noticed going out, walking around the town, talking to people. It's like everyone wants to be social all of a sudden. The people that I've walked past all my life in my neighborhood, we're all stopping and chatting and we're actually connecting and we're doing the things that we should have been doing, but you know, we were too busy or we were too up in our heads. And so now all of a sudden with this shared sort of sense of whatever we're facing, we're all of a sudden like connected. So
I have to say, I think those are lovely thoughts, Hugo, but it's been my observation that based on how things are going, like with what, I don't remember his name, the gentleman from Serbia, Sedimir, mentioned about like how they're retroactively looking through your location history to say you've been in contact with. I don't really see that we're going to have time to enjoy the moment before the new era of biosurveillance kicks on. And we have location tracking that's introduced for the sake of our well-being, but really just means less privacy or less of the idea of privacy, depending on how much privacy you think we have at the moment. Again, lovely thoughts. And I am noticing that people are looking up and looking around, but I'm also noticing that people are now hyper aware of their personal space. I mean, we have this thing called social distancing now, which is being used kind of like an axe held over our necks. Like if you don't practice social distancing, you could kill someone. Our governor literally tweeted that in Washington State. He said, to those of you who could be practicing social distancing but are not, stop it, you could kill someone. And I mean, so I think the fear is being propagated too fast for us to hold hands and sing Kumbaya, not to be flippant.
Oh, sure. I'm not suggesting that. There's no doubt. Like our media is exactly the same. It's like, it is incredibly, like if you put a picture of yourself up at the moment, standing within a meter of someone, you're going to get slammed. right? And you're irresponsible and you're this and you're that and you're going to kill someone. And it's really playing out. There's no question. We're getting it here as well. There's no doubt about it. You know, I suppose what I'm saying though is, like, I went to a, you know, cafe the other day and we're all standing out 2 meters apart from each other. But we were, you know, so we're socially distant, as I like to call it. But we could still talk, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I absolutely agree with all the surveillance and, you know, you can see the potential of where this could go. But there is this window. That's all I'm saying. It's like a window.
A fresh perspective.
Yeah, well, there's going to be as many different perspectives here, of course, as there are sets of eyes and ears, senses. And as I say, with something like this that's occurring on such a large scale and has so many different implications, so it's not just on a spatially large, but temporarily, we don't know to what extent that this is going to reconfigure society permanently. As permanent as there is a society to reconfigure in ways that probably everybody here sees as not good. So what I wonder, was wondering listening to different people speak, is what do we all want? What do we actually want out of life? Because, as Hugo joked, some people do just want to spend the rest of their lives on a couch watching Netflix. So, I mean, they could really get with this whole new world order, really. Many people do just want to spend their whole lives on the internet, digitally connecting. And they don't really care if they're being monitored, and even their heart rates and their blood temperatures are being monitored, and their every hug and kiss is being policed. They don't really care, I'd say. There are people like that anyway. I don't think there's anyone here like that. But to different degrees, all of us here, I presume, have got our ideas about comfort and fulfillment and satisfaction and the things we want out of life. And so something like this could be very inconvenient. As I say, for me, I had a 2020 vision, and oddly, it only kind of came into existence in the last month or so. So it was coincident with this global clampdown triggered by this alleged virus that prevents me from actually planning my global vision after all. I'm not saying it won't happen. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I see that as a positive, and potentially a positive for me personally, because one of the things I realized about my global vision was that it really was centered around the desire to align myself and my life as much as possible with some higher principle that isn't, you know, that transcends my own understanding. So really to serve life itself, to serve God if you're a Christian. It doesn't matter. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say here. It doesn't matter what words I use, to really put my life in service to the whole. And I knew that the one thing that was likely to sabotage that would be my own desire and my will and my determination to do it, because I thought it would make my life better and more comfortable and more satisfying and more interesting, whatever, the way I was invested in it, and therefore would be pushing for something I wanted under the pretext that this was, you know, for the good of all. That would be the thing most likely to, or the only thing, really, because if it's God's will, then it's going to happen, and I'm just trying to align with that. So then when this virus thing hit, when the panic hit, when the clampdown began, that was how I saw it. That was one of the ways I saw it, besides this is a bit bloody inconvenient, was, well, okay, so now I've got no choice but to let go and let God, because the only thing that can go up against the government is God. Certainly not you or me. I hope nobody here is naive to think that we can take down, you know, the the global superstate. Maybe we can find ways around it, and so on and so forth. And we're going to have to learn some real ingenuity. I mean, if these are the end times, and they say, might as well at least, you know, consider that possibility. It's not just going to be like a movie. I mean, we've got all these movies that we're probably, some of us are rewatching now, Mad Max or Contagion or whatever it is, 12 Monkeys, where it makes it seem fun because it's Hollywood, it's movie stars. And so I at least have got this quite glamorous idea about the apocalypse, about the end of civilization, etc. But of course, if and when it starts to happen, it's bloody inconvenience, the ultimate inconvenience. It takes convenience to a transcendental level. So, what do we actually want? What do I actually want out of this life? It's not comfort and convenience. It's not even happiness, although I'll take that. And I think that happiness comes with the thing I want. So, you know, I might be my fingers crossed behind my back. I'm not saying I don't care about happiness. I'm just saying that the thing that I really want my life to consist of, it can't be encompassed by the idea of happiness. Truth, wholeness, fullness. Some eternal connection. To be connected to that which does not pass away. Governments come and go. Civilizations come and go. Species come and go. Planets come and go. Stars come and go. Everything dies. And we are certainly going to die in the next few decades, unless we're fool enough to take the transhumanist Kool-Aid, in which case we'll get sucked into the phantom zone. And have the kind of eternal life that no one deserves. Anyway, that was kind of a bad taste joke, really. We're all going to die. So maybe, you know, massive inconvenience, and as Hugo was saying, you know, a taste of a reality that actually most human beings have suffered under and been oppressed by throughout history in one way or another. You know, we're the luxury generations, really. We've been born into luxury and we've lived a life of luxury. But so maybe actual real hardship, even on an apocalyptic scale, is what we want. I've always wanted the apocalypse, even while knowing that I would not enjoy it when it came. It would be very, very hard. I'd have to be in a very good place to be able to enjoy the kind of things that we can expect to see in the end of days, whether we're religious or not. You know, as I say, that term's very loaded and all the rest of it. I think, like Dirty Harry over there, there's a hell of a lot of evidence for the most nightmarish dystopia that Hollywood never imagined, and that we're on the very brink of it, and it's absolutely terrifying. It goes beyond terrifying. And actually, it goes beyond terrifying because it goes into what James was touching on, which is, it's just heartbreaking. It's just going to be so painful to watch humanity go down the tubes voluntarily. It is painful. But if that's our reality, then so be it. And it does bring out the best in some of us. Potentially, you know, the worst of times, the best of men and women. They said that about the wars. And that was separate from how just or unjust those wars were. At the highest level, those wars were, I'm sure, quite unnecessary. They weren't good wars. There's no such thing as a good war. And these are not good times, and they never have been. But isn't it better to actually really be fully living that reality than being in a comfy bubble watching Netflix dystopian movies thinking, whoa, I wish this would happen. Oh, wait a minute, it is happening. Wait, no, what's the, you know, turn on the next binge watch, start the next binge watch, because actually, I don't want to go out there and deal with human scapegoating or empty grocery store shelves or enforced fines and microchips, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to require an awful lot of imagination, ingenuity, responsibility, spontaneity above all. I mean, it already does. You all made it here, we all made it here. It's not as though this dystopian world that's unfolding, being unveiled before our eyes, wasn't already prepared. It was all the machinery is in place, they're just unveiling it now. It was already happening, people are already microchipped. I can't even travel with my cat without microchipping him. It's heartbreaking. People are already using social media to let themselves be surveyed and thinking that somehow they've been... Anyway, you don't need me to get apocalyptic. That was where I started, that we're different perspectives here, and some are more apocalyptic than others, just to use that word. Some are more tuned into the dark, and some less, and I don't know what that, you know, there are different ways that that's a benefit and a detriment, I suppose. I was wondering if anyone had any positive feelings about this, what's happening now, because I do. I mean, first of all, I feel optimistic about my own plans. I think that God has a way. I know that God has a way, and I think that we all have our ways to get with that, or to find it, to follow the guiding intelligence within us to where we need to be. And that's not going to change, no matter how tight the clamp down gets, no matter, you know, every grain of sand is microchipped. Well, not this grain of sand. And anyway, I just found out today, it's pretty easy to neutralize a microchip. You just need to go into a supermarket and put your thing over the scanner thing, because that's the things that, you know, set off the alarms. If you try and steal something, they have to neutralize those things. So there are ways, you know. They're not as clever as they want us to think they are. And we are guided by something that is so far beyond anything that we think of as clever. I mean, it's really unstoppable and uncontainable. So there is a way to see this as a positive. It is possible, and that isn't just about, well, I think I'll still be able to do what I want to do. I do feel that, but I'm also, well, I'm okay, I'm in a reasonably good place, and I realize that's maybe not true for all of you by any means, so that might seem, you know, a bit unfair or something, but I don't just mean that anyway. I mean that I feel as though there is a real opening in this that is much beyond what Hugo was talking about. There's an opening, there's an opportunity for us to tune into what will see us through these times. Like, the more pressure, but it can go both ways. Like, if we panic and we react and we get agitated, which is what they want, that's built into the program, if you will, then of course we lose our balance, we lose our ground, and it's harder. But if we just respond to the pressure in a way that's responsible, you know, we're just responding and not reacting, then the pressure is there for us to get real. Time to get real. What the fuck am I farting around with, whether I should eat kettle chips? You know, if they reduce my ability to tune into my body and my guidance system, and I'm out there trying to avoid being tasered by my neighbor, then okay, I think I'll pass on the kettle crisps. You know, survival is at stake here. You know, he who fights and runs away lives to eat kettle chips another day. Sorry, the metaphor got mixed up there. But, you know, if we want to enjoy our comforts, first of all, we need to survive. And, you know, many of our comforts do reduce our capacity to survive, which means many of the discomforts increase it. It's like training. Life during wartime. This ain't no party. This ain't no disco. This ain't no fooling around. Hard to go from talking to singing. But maybe I'll get us all to sing one of these days. This ain't no fooling around.
I do appreciate that bringing health to the fore. As a seemingly natural response to this thing, I've started exercising and lifting weights every other day. And I'm not saying that I started washing my hands obsessively, but I am saying that I did kind of go the other direction with it in terms of being more mindful of bodily health. 100% there with you. I think that's the perfect reaction, especially in a situation where you feel so powerless and are demonstrably powerless. I can't do anything about getting back to work, but I can control the number of press ups that I do. So,
I was going to say something, but then I lost it. Jason, I was very. What's the positive word for triggered? inspired, touched, but brought in with something you said, and I've forgotten it. But it was about my feeling, my experience in this. I'm in London, right, which has not yet gone mad. I went out today, I went to the Heath. There's loads of people on the Heath. All the cafes are, most of them are doing takeaway services only now. So it was, the train to get to the Heath was empty. It's usually full up on a Saturday lunchtime. But so it was kind of normal, kind of not. I could feel both. I could feel the difference. I could feel that it wasn't that scary yet, but I could also feel something beginning. What's it going to come to? And so on a deeper level, I had a sense of fear and I don't know. I can't think of another word, because it wasn't only fear. This sort of a kind of awareness that it was and is, you know, tapping on my door or coming from within. And what you said, which was something about finding ourselves, finding our response, you used the word responsible, and I was taking it in as who am I really? I feel like I've been, you said something like it, this has been building up for a long time, and you know, I don't feel as if I've consciously been preparing for it. You've been talking about the apocalypse coming for 30 years. I haven't felt that way, as you know. Now I don't know. All I know is that I feel compelled to be a truer version of myself in these times. And I want, you know, the irony, which I don't know any of you yet except for Jason, so you won't know this, but I've been playing at self-isolating for years. I'm quite solitary in lots of ways. I love not having to go out. I love watching TV, same with the cats. Blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly when they say you have to self-isolate, I'm like, no, I don't. There's this very strong feeling that something's going on out there and I need to be part of it, right? And I want to be part of it in my truest way. And I don't know how to expand on that, perhaps, but it's about being part of the community, bringing my trust into this. Is the thing, it's if I go down this road of being afraid, it's easy, it's so easy to go down that road, and it's there, my fear. What feels even more real or valuable or beautiful is a kind of trust that why might not we be okay, actually, if we can do this? And what can I do about that? How can I be part of that? Let's make sure that we can reach something that is really, well, Jason, you did this on your podcast on your own, and I really, as you know, connected with that, feeling this sense of being part of the loving collective, or the collective of love, or the whatever that is, I don't know what it is, but that feeling of not being the ego, not being a person, not being on the attack, not being in a war. You know, it's not that I don't feel all those things, of course I do, but I have a sense sometimes, and I want it more and more and more, of feeling that's not the truth. That's not, I don't want to take this literally. I don't. I hope that makes sense in some ways, at least, because I feel like I spoke a lot now. And so I think I'll stop now.
Thanks. Mari's nodding. So it made sense. Mari, I can see that. Did you want to share anything, Mari, today? feeling in the mood?
Hi, everybody. The sense of the global nature of this is quite apparent to me. You know, it doesn't matter who I'm speaking to, or even, you know, across the world, as we all spread at the moment, we're all affected by this. And I've noticed these sort of two ways that people are reacting, either as Ashley's just been saying, really wanting to be a force of good in the world, and I'm feeling that as well, like I want to volunteer, you know, I want to help people who can't get out, get stuff, and there's all these groups springing up doing this, and so the beautiful side of humanity is quite apparent, but also the selfish, greedy, stupid side of humanity. And I can get to thinking, my God, you know, we need a good plague because this is really ridiculous. And so all these different reactions going on off of myself are quite interesting. And I'm sort of, never before have I felt so lucky, you know, every meal that I eat, I'm like, wow, you know, I don't know how much longer I'll be able to get deep fried tofu and, you know, coriander. Do you know what I mean? And sort of like all these strawberries and stuff like that out of season, you know, how lucky we are. So I think Jason mentioned this sense that, you know, every day is really precious. And I mean, I don't know how many know, but I'm quite depressive and suffer a lot with chronic depression. And I feel a sort of sense of being... Of enjoying the small moments, you know, all the spring flowers that are blooming at the moment just make me sort of feel so, you know, just so much pleasure. And that is something I've never really been able to connect with before because of the overriding depression of, oh my God, what am I going to do with my life? Who am I? You know, I've got lots of social anxiety. Have I spoken too much? Have I spoken enough? I don't fucking know. And the kind of like self-recrimination that I can suffer from a lot, you know, it's all sort of gone because what we're facing potentially is it has the potential to change the face of the earth. I'm just gonna have to let the dog out 1 second. Anything? And it does, I do feel that there's a positive where you know, seeing how Venice, the waters are crystal clear and dolphins are back and the smog's gone over Wuhan and they can hear the birds again, you know, so there are, Mother Earth is sort of healing just this short amount of time that we're not, and also the potential for us to wake up to the ruling elite and what they're doing. I was only thinking today, like, well, if they're going to ground all the planes and there's no transport, I wonder what's going to happen with the trails across the sky. Are they going to stop, or will they carry on and be really exposed? You know, so there's so much. It's worst of times and the best of times, you know, we are living in really interesting times, and I don't have a lot of fear at the moment because I'm kind of okay with dying. Don't want pain, but I'm all right to sort of like check out at any point, which is my backup plan, I guess. So I'm just really appreciative of you know, that I can still eat nice food and enjoy the flowers, you know, whilst I still can, because I think, you know, it's been such a struggle for me, this existential crisis that Harry was talking about, that I don't want any more crap. I don't really care about living on the other side of this. I'd love it if we weren't so consumer based and, you know, we were more community and there weren't great big behemoth supermarkets and we could all shop locally and seasonally. And I mean, I'd love this world. If there was some change that is just too big to be able to describe in a soundbite, but I'm okay with not. I'm just watching every second, every moment, every sort of day. And Facebook's just so bloody funny at the moment as well. We can, you know, laugh while we still can. But it's been great being here and listening to everyone, and best of luck.
Just to conclude what we were discussing in our group with Sedomir, in summary, I think the change begins and ends with the individual. This may be this may be a way to launch a new kind of personal accountability for people. And like I learned from one of your sources and one of your articles, Jason, propaganda begins with the individual and ends with the individual. And so I think it's upon us to, above all else, seek the change we like to see in the world within. And that begins with embracing the truth, no matter how painful.
Amen to that.
I just can't help but see the current event in the light of history. And I imagine World War II is pretty apocalyptic, particularly if you're in London or Dresden or some of those places. And I guess what's interesting is the current world is what happened after that apocalyptic event. But now we're... And I thought what was interesting about David Icke's, and it was interesting that you mentioned that straight off, because prior to hearing Harry's account of his situation, my initial feeling after hearing David Icke's presentation was an uplifting positiveness, because he was dismissing the seriousness of the virus itself, which up until that point, it's amazing how rapidly things change at the moment, because this weekend is a lot more relaxed, I think, in my family situation than last weekend, which was quite high levels, heightened anxiety. And I said to my wife, I don't need to feel these things because you do all the feeling for me. You're the one down the deepest, darkest hole here of the deepest, darkest, blackest apocalyptic occurrence of what we may be facing. So hearing David Icke's presentation through the week, I guess it was a relief. Now, having time to consider what might be coming up on the economic front, I mean, we've probably got 3 to 6 months. We'll probably have a gap where things may be able to return to normal, but maybe after that, I can't really see how the governments can keep everything afloat. I mean, they're going to go bankrupt themselves. But then again, I'm still seeing what we're experiencing now in the light of history. And how often do we think about the billions of people who have already lived and died before us, who have gone through all kinds of changes, whether they were early hominids on the prairies getting their skulls ripped open by some predator, or somebody working in a coal mine, or just all the human existences. We are part of all the human existences, and there will be human existences after us, after we're gone. So I think it's really important to remember that we are in time, and time is all we've got. And it's funny that my existential crisis before this existential crisis, the concern is that I'm going to be distracted from that existential crisis, because I thought that was really fruitful at that time. So, you know, even those early liminalists prior to this event, we were sort of touching on certain things, particularly death and time, I guess. So they're my thoughts. I think we've covered in this a lot of territory, which concurrent with, I think, particularly the kind of clarity that can come up, but also the anxieties that everybody's going to be facing. So also, just on a technical point of view, I thought the breakout rooms were really valid, really helpful. Actually, it was nice to be able to be intimately introduced to some of the other participants. And I'll sign out. So I actually, because my son's sporting commitments have now been cancelled, am actually available. Every month would probably suit me, but I'd be seeing you all again.
Thanks, Simon. Right, well, I guess we go back into our lives and see what awaits us there. I have sunshine and beautiful nature and drinkable water and fresh air, not meaning to brag here. It's available to all of us, even if you have to travel to get it, and we may not be able to travel soon. So I guess that just re-emphasizes my practical advice, is, you know, find a place in nature and set up camp there, I would say, or at least think about it, even if it's just a thought experiment. Time and saying, well, time is all we've got, that would be true at a physiological level in terms of survival. But then, of course, as Tyler Durden says, on a long enough time frame, you know, everything ends with zero, whatever misquote there. So there may be something besides time that we have. There may be some aspect of ourselves that isn't bound by time. I mean, this has been my experience, actually, that we're in two places at the same time, or two spaces. One is temporal, and in that temporal space, time is always running out, and there's never enough of it. Time is always against us, even to quote Morpheus. And then in the other space, well, there is no time at all to run out. There's an eternal opening onto existence, just a never-ending manifestation of the creation, recreating itself eternally. I also feel that Simon was saying, that he got from David Icke, that the virus is the least of our worries. That even if it was manufactured by human agents, it's still a bio-agent, and it still is determined by our own bodies. Like, how our bodies respond to the virus determines its effects upon us as much as or more than the nature or the configuration of the virus itself. I actually don't believe in viruses because I don't know. I've never seen one. It may just be a theory. Whatever the case, we know that something's happening in human bodies and their relationship to the environment. And I see that as a really as a good thing, no matter how it plays out. Like, the however our environment, nature at large, impacts our bodies, then we want to let it in. We want to let nature in and let nature out and find our place in nature. And if nature's going to wipe us out as a species, so be it. So be it, right? I mean, it's in our natures to die. And that can't be a bad thing, unless you're a nihilist. And of course it is, but then everything's a bad thing if you're a nihilist. So so yeah, I would just say it's helpful to enjoy and connect to that, not that which is eternal directly, because that's very tricky to connect to something we can't access with our senses, but that which outlives us on a vast scale. So that would be the planet, nature itself, and the sun. There are life forces out there that perceive existence on a vastly greater scale, and that have a wholly different relationship to death. And actually, that would include what's below us as well as what's above us. The animals also don't fear death, unless it's in the form of a forest fire, or at harmony with themselves and with nature. So there's an awful lot that's assisting us and supporting us even now, even in the world as it is. It's really just a question of going out there and paying attention to it. It's an irony that I think that we get to have these connective, hopefully soul-connective meetings via the technology that has largely been designed to survey and monitor, police and control us. But that seems like quite a rich irony. Say that God or life itself will use all the instrumentalities it has to further its agendas, including the dark draconian elite are also instruments of the divine. So fear not. It will all come out in the wash. The truth that will set us free, painfully, no doubt. But, you know, birth is painful.
heart change with the times. Strangers in the night pass up and downtown. Changes in your soul.
Once again, you've listened to As a Fly on the Wall, some of the dialogues, participation and exploration of a recent live Limitless meetup. If you're interested in attending another one, then there will be an opportunity, I imagine, within the next 2 or 3 weeks, perhaps sometime around Easter or after Easter, I'm not sure. I know Dave is doing a number of things around that time, including, for those who don't know, on the 4th of April, a free meet and greet event. Those of you who are drawn to level up, understand a little bit more about what Dave Ashana is about, you can find out for yourself directly through interface, albeit online, via that event. That's at daveoshana.com. That's on the 4th of April 2020. There's a separate audio which just brings together the shorter discussion of Dave Ashana and the reasons to be cheerful and interested about Dave Ashana. You'll find that somewhere also in the blog post where you found this audio.
Changes in the stars, change with the night. Strangers in the heart, stay up until light. Dangers in your soul, they motion to the stars. Changes in the heart, change with the dark. Changes in the heart, change with the times. Strangers in the night, pass up and downtown. Changes in your soul, they happen all the time.